Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is What's Wrong with Our Schools, Volume 6 of the 10-part public television series Free to Choose. Parental choice and parental responsibility in the education of children is consistent with a free society. Centralized government control has eroded freedom and adversely affected the quality of education. The poor help pay for education for the future rich. Milton Friedman has long advocated using vouchers to solve the problem, and here he explains why. Listen now, and don't forget to subscribe to get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
These youngsters are beginning another day at one of America's public schools, Hyde Park High School in Boston. What happens when they pass through those doors is a vivid illustration of some of the problems facing America's schools. They have to pass through metal detectors. They're faced by security guards looking for hidden weapons. They're watched over by armed police. Isn't that awful? What a way for kids to have to go to school through metal detectors and to be searched. What can they conceivably learn under such circumstances? Nobody is happy with this kind of education. The taxpayers surely aren't. This isn't cheap education. After all, those uniformed policemen, those metal detectors have to be paid for. And what about the broken windows and the torn school books and the smashed school equipment? The teachers who teach here don't like this kind of situation. The students don't like to come here to go to school.
And most of all, the parents. They are the ones who get the worst deal. They pay taxes like the rest of us. And they are just as concerned about the kind of education that their kids get as the rest of us are. They know their kids are getting a bad education. But they feel trapped. Many of them can see no alternative but to continue sending their kids to schools like this.
To go back to the beginning, it all started with the fine idea that every child should have a chance to learn his 3 R's. Sometimes in June, when it gets hot, the kids come out in the yard to do their lessons, all 15 of them, ages 5 to 13, along with their teacher. This is the last one-room schoolhouse still operating in the state of Vermont. That is the way it used to be. Parental control, parents choosing the teacher, parents monitoring the schooling, parents even getting together and chipping in to paint the schoolhouse as they did here just a few weeks ago. Parental concern is still here, as much in the slums of the big cities as in bucolic Vermont. But control by parents over the schooling of their children is today the exception, not the rule. Increasingly, schools have come under the control of centralized administrations, professional educators deciding what shall be taught, who shall do the teaching, and even what children shall go to what school. The people who lose most from this system are the poor and the disadvantaged in the large cities. They are simply stuck. They have no alternative. Of course, if you're well off, you do have a choice. You can send your child to a private school, or you can move to an area where the public schools are excellent, as the parents of many of these students have done. These students are graduating from Weston High School in one of Boston's wealthier suburbs. Their parents pay taxes instead of tuition, and they certainly get better value for their money than do the parents in Hyde Park. That's partly because they've kept a good deal of control over the local schools, and in the process, they've managed to retain many of the virtues of the one-room schoolhouse.
Thomas Andrew Green, Margaret R. Story.
Students here, like Barbara King, get the equivalent of a private education. They have excellent recreational facilities.
how does his plan differ?
They have a teaching staff that is dedicated and responsive to parents and students.
Barbara.
He's decisive. He's a red.
There's an atmosphere which encourages learning. Yet the cost per pupil here is no higher than in many of our inner city schools. The difference is that at Weston, it all goes for education and that the parents still retain a good deal of control. Unfortunately, most parents have lost control over how their tax money is spent. Ava Bell goes to Hyde Park High. Her parents, too, want her to have a good education. But many of the students here are not interested in schooling. And the teachers, however dedicated, soon lose heart in an atmosphere like this. Ava Bell's parents are certainly not getting value for their tax money.
I think it's a shame, really, that parents are being ripped off like we are. When I say, I'm talking about parents like me that work every day, scuffle to try to make ends meet. We send our kids to school hoping that they'll receive something that will benefit them in the future for when they go out here and compete in the job market. Unfortunately, none of that is taking place out at Hyde Park.
Children like Ava are being shortchanged by a system that was designed to help them. But there are ways to give all parents more say over their children's schooling. This is a fundraising evening for schools supported by a voluntary organization, New York's Inner City Scholarship Fund. The prints that have brought people here have been loaned by a wealthy Japanese industrialist. Events like this have helped raise $2 million to finance Catholic parochial schools in New York. The people here are part of a long American tradition. The results of their private voluntary activities have been remarkable. This is one of the poorest neighborhoods in New York City, the Bronx. Yet this parochial school, supported by the fund, is a joy to visit.
Boys and girls, we're going to start the workshop now. You start out with task one, put the words in alphabetical order. The answers are on my...
The youngsters here, from poor families, are at St. John Chrysostom's because their parents have picked this school. And their parents are paying some of the costs from their own pockets. The children are well-behaved, eager to learn. The teachers are dedicated.
Behavior, consistent, contrary, destruction.
How old are you, honey?
Six.
What are you working on?
The cost per pupil here is far less than in the public schools. Yet on the average, the children are two grades ahead. That's because teachers and parents are free to choose how the children shall be taught. Private money has replaced tax money. And so control has been taken away from the bureaucrats and put back where it belongs. This doesn't work just for younger children. In the 60s, Harlem was devastated by riots. It was a hotbed of trouble. Many teenagers dropped out of school. Groups of concerned parents and teachers decided to do something about it. They used private funds to take over empty stores. And they set up what became known as storefront schools. One of the first and most successful was Harlem Prep. It was designed to cater to students for whom conventional education had failed.
Kennedy was a very dangerous president in the sense that he was excessively popular.
Many of the teachers didn't have the right pieces of paper to qualify for employment in public schools. That didn't stop them from doing a good job here. A lot of the students had been misfits and dropouts. Here they found the sort of teaching they wanted. After all, they had made a deliberate choice to come to Harlem Prep. It was a very successful school. Many students went on to college and some to leading colleges. But after some years, the school ran short of cash. The Board of Education offered Ed Carpenter, the head of the school and one of its founders, tax money. provided he would conform to their regulations.
I love him, and we got along, and I know he's busy, but sometimes...
After a long battle to preserve independence, he finally gave in. The school was taken over by bureaucrats.
And I know he doesn't, but I was a little bit hurt.
And basically we have three.
I felt that a school like Harlem Prep would certainly die and not prosper under the rigid bureaucracy of a board of education. We had to see what was going to happen. I didn't believe it was going to be good. I'm right. What has happened since we've come to the board of education is not all good. It's not all bad, but it's more bad than good.
Now, again, we divide things into categories, but the category is really what?
The school may not look different yet, but 30 of the former teachers have gone. Ed Carpenter has resigned. The school is being moved to a traditional school building. No one, except maybe the bureaucrats, is very optimistic about its future. Unfortunately, the strangling of successful experiments by bureaucrats is not unusual. The same thing happened in California at a place called Alum Rock. For 3 years, parents at this school could choose to send their children to any of several specially created mini schools, each with a different curriculum. The experiment was designed to restore choice to those who were most closely involved, the parents and the teachers.
Probably the most significant thing that happened was that the teachers, for the first time, had some power, and they were able to build the curriculum to fit the needs of the children as they saw it. The state and local school board did not dictate the kind of curriculum that was used in McCollum School. The parents became more involved in the school. They attended more meetings. Also, they had a power to pull their child out of that particular mini school if they chose another mini school.
Yeah, at least in my opinion, was...
Giving parents greater choice had a dramatic effect on educational quality. In terms of test scores, this school went from 13th to second place among the schools in its district. But the experiment is now over. When school resumed after the summer vacation, this was just another public school, back in the hands of the bureaucrats. Giving parents a choice is a good idea, yet it always meets with opposition from the educational establishment. This is Ashford, a town in the south of England. For 4 years, there have been efforts here to introduce an experiment in greater parental choice. Parents would be given vouchers covering the cost of schooling. They could use the voucher to send their child to any school of their choice. I have long believed that children, teachers, all of us, would benefit from a voucher system. But the headmaster here, who happens also to be secretary of the local teachers' union, has very different views about introducing vouchers.
We see this as a barrier between us and the parent. This sticky little piece of paper in their hand, coming in and under duress, you will do this or else. We make our judgment because we believe it's in the best interest of every Willie and every little Johnny that we've got, and not because someone's going to say, if you don't do it, we will do that. It's this sort of philosophy of the marketplace that we object to.
In other words, Mr. G objects to giving the customer, in this case the parent, anything to say about the kind of schooling his child gets. Instead, the bureaucrats should decide.
We are answerable to parents, through our governing bodies, through the inspectorate to the Kent County Council, and through Her Majesty's inspectorate to the Secretary of State. These are people, professionals, who are able to make professional judgments.
But things look very different from the point of view of parents. Jason Walton's parents had to fight the bureaucracy, the professionals, for a year before they could get him into the school that they thought was best suited to his needs.
As the present system stands, I think parents have got no freedom of choice whatsoever. They are told what is good for them by the teachers. They are told that the teachers are doing a great job and they've just got no say at all. If the voucher system were introduced, I think it would bring teachers and parents together, I think closer. The parent that is worried about his child would remove their child from the school that wasn't giving a good service and take it to one that was. And if a school is going to crumble because it's got nothing but vandalism, it's generally slack on discipline and the children aren't learning, well, that's a good thing from my point of view.
Even good schools like this would benefit from a voucher system, from having to shape up or see parents take children elsewhere. But that's not how it looks to the headmaster.
I'm not sure that parents know what is best educationally for their children. They know what's best for them to eat. They know the best environment they can provide at home. But we've been trained to ascertain the problems of children, to detect their weaknesses, to put right those things that need putting right. And we want to do this freely, with the cooperation of parents, and not under any undue strains.
Well, I can understand the teacher saying, yes, it's a gun at my head, but they've got the same gun at the parent's head at the moment. The parent goes up to the teacher and says, well, I'm not satisfied with what you're doing, and the teacher can say, well, tough. You can't take him away. You can't move him. You can't do what you like, so go away and stop bothering me. That can be the attitude of some teachers today, and often is. But now that the positions are being reversed and the roles are changed, I can only say tough on the teachers. Let them pull their socks up and give us a better deal and let us participate more.
In America, there is one part of education where the market has had extensive scope. That's higher education. These students attend Dartmouth College, a private school founded in 1769. The college is supported entirely by private donations, income from endowment, and student fees. It has a high reputation and a fine record. 95% of the students who enroll here complete their undergraduate course and get a degree.
The students here pay high fees, fees which cover most of the cost of the schooling which they get. Most of them get the money from their parents, but some are on scholarships provided either by Dartmouth or by outside sources. Still others take out loans to pay the costs of schooling, loans which they will have to pay back years later. Still others work either during the school year or during the summer to pay the costs.
Many students work in the college's own hotel. This girl is helping to pay her own way, which is pretty good evidence that she's serious about getting an education.
Lovely sauce for the fish.
Sure, it's a lemon and butter sauce. Would that be okay?
Parents of prospective students come here on shopping expeditions to check out the product before they buy.
What you have here is a private market in education. The college is selling schooling. The students are buying schooling. And as in most such markets, both sides have a strong incentive to serve one another. For the college, it has a strong incentive to provide the kind of schooling that its students want. If it doesn't, they can simply pick up and go elsewhere. For the students, they want to get their money's worth. They are customers, and like every customer everywhere, they want to get full value for the money they are paying.
I really would like to know where the chromium is binding on these nucleotides.
There is some stuff you want.
And so, much of the success here comes from the fact that students understand precisely the costs involved, and they are determined to get their money's worth.
Different compounds elude.
They send you sheets saying how much everything costs all the time so that you know exactly, you can break it down per lecture. And when you see each lecture costing $35 and you think of the other things you can be doing with the $35, you're making very sure that you're going to go to that lecture.
Many of the buildings and facilities at Dartmouth have been donated by private individuals and foundations. Like other private universities, Dartmouth has combined the selling of monuments with the provision of education, and the one activity reinforces the other.
Full program in women's studies.
The students, in effect, earn part of their keep by helping to solicit alumni for contributions, knowing full well that they will be solicited in their turn.
We could get any sort of pledge from you, it would be greatly appreciated.
It's another way in which the real value of education is brought home.
Right.
Thank
well,
you
I can't
very
tell
much,
you how
Mr.
much
Conway.
The alums...
really, it's because of your donations and people like you that I'm able to go to Dartmouth. Otherwise, I'd be paying more than $12,000. Well, thank you. You pay about 50% of our tuition.
I don't know if you're aware, but
oh, that's fine.
Right. Actual pledges.
This may not be the usual idea of an economic market, but it is nonetheless a marketplace where buyers can choose and sellers must compete for custom.
What happens when the educational market is distorted? Look at state colleges and universities. Their fees are generally very low, paying for only a small part of the cost of schooling. They attract serious students just as interested in their education as the students at Dartmouth or other private schools. But they also attract a great many others. Students who come because fees are low, residential housing is good, food is good, and above all, there are lots of their peers. It's a pleasant interlude for them.
The University of California at Los Angeles. For those students who are here as a pleasant interlude, going to class is the price they pay to be here, not the product they are buying.
We frequently wind up with people who cannot compete favorably with even the average person here. There is a magnet here for everything. We have the best weather, practically speaking, in the country. Hollywood is here, Beverly Hills is here, the social scene, the television industry in this country is centered here.
The justification for using tax money to support institutions like this is supposed to be so that every youngster, regardless of the income or wealth of his parents, can go to college. A few youngsters from poor families are here, but not very many. Most of these students are from middle and upper income families, yet everybody, whatever his income, pays taxes to help support these institutions. That is a disgraceful situation. It's hardly what public education was all about. These students are being subsidized by people who will never go to college. That means that on the average, people who will end up with higher incomes are being subsidized by people who will end up with lower incomes. And in addition, the quality of undergraduate education is poor. Undergraduate teaching is not what UCLA is famous for. Aside from its athletic teams, UCLA's reputation is for graduate work and research. Faculty members have every incentive to do research. That's the way to advance in their profession. They have much less to gain by good teaching.
I think we ran well over, didn't we? Appreciate everybody staying. Right. We will have our examination on Tuesday.
Only about half of those who enroll at UCLA complete the undergraduate course. Compare that with the 95% at Dartmouth who finish the work for their degrees. What a waste of student time, and what a waste of taxpayers' money.
What should we do about this disgraceful situation? We must not deny any young man or woman who desires one an education. Everyone who has the capacity and the desire to have a higher education should be enabled to do so, provided they are willing to undertake the obligation to pay the costs of their schooling, either currently or in later years out of the higher income that their education will make possible. We now have a governmental program of loans, which is supposedly directed to this objective, but it's a loan program in name only. The interest rate charged is well below the market rate. Many of these loans are never paid back. We must have a system under which those who are not able or do not go to college are not forced to pay for those who do.
As we've seen, the market works in education. When people pay for what they get, they value what they get. The market works in higher education.
the state of being uneducated. You don't know enough.
It can also work at the level of primary and secondary education.
Ignorant. Ignorant, right. Ignorant.
Until we change the way we run our public schools, far too many children will end up without being able to read, write, or do arithmetic. That's not what any of us wants.
The system is not working, and it is not working because it lacks a vital ingredient. The experts mean well, but a centralized system cannot possibly have that degree of personal concern for each individual child that we have as parents. The centralization produces deadening uniformity. It destroys the experimentation that is a fundamental source of progress. What we need to do is to enable parents, by vouchers or other means, to have more say about the school which their child goes to, a public school or a private school, whichever meets the need of the child best. That will inevitably give them also more say about what their children are taught and how they are taught. Market competition is the surest way to improve the quality and promote innovation in education as in every other field.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.